Das mit dem We started this morning with our morning classes in committee. We prayed in the morning. When we stay different, we don't pray the same. So we had our little prayer. It's nice to have you here, and we have a very long way to go. There are lots of things that we familiarize in ourselves with in terms of what we do as this 20, because I think we're meeting with us for the very first time as an entity. So I'll first start with introductions. I'm the chairperson of this select committee of education, arts, sports and culture, science and entertainment. It's quite big. If we can all go in one place, you think it's Easter in Moria. It's a little Moria. It's quite deep. So you'll bear with us because some of us here are actually new in this sector. And some of us are new even in implementary politics, in the political activist and politicians before. And that part of our meeting today has to be let's know one another and check how we've been doing your thing and what is the way forward in terms of what you want to see your organized, what level do you want to see. So like I said, my name is Elegant Chavez and I'm the chairperson. Give over to the team to introduce themselves. I'll start right at the end this time.
We'll begin at the end.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dalmai Christian. I'm a member of the
And my name is Kamala Kostin, the Raj Shukh, the manager of the committee.
My name is Zumbo de la Paz, the manager of the committee.
And my name is
Thank you. You know, it's very nice when they say when the experts are not around, people will boast about how much they know. People say how much you know, that they are Karatekas until a Chinese lands in front of them. So all the time when people introduce themselves, now today was with pencil.
I'm traveling.
I got you the answer here. So you're welcome. All numbers we engage in with the you are from pencil. Yeah. You introduce your team and then we
thank you very much. My assumption is, since I had honorable members introducing themselves in various languages, I guess even for guests we are allowed to follow the seat. Lina Lakakena David Mahasamela, Kena Mudula Studio Wa Ten South, le khono ka madimabe ke mo ke ne ke le poeta pele ya Pan South ka bakala re bana le kopano e thomile ka mushukulu wa ke fela le khono ka moka ba shumeli ba kopano bona mo ya lo ka madimabe ke nna le madimabe ba khono go tsata ka le di tikisetse le di dirile pele ga nako ke le boga.
Sotswa setolo ba bagoma.
Mongwele. Good morning to all of you. My name is Preeta Dapadeen and I'm the deputy chair of Pan South. Oh, I must actually use the full name, the Pan South African Languages Board.
No, we are right.
Nake mabeta wa rali ni ki choko ofisini ya representa wa pekacho. Molweni, Sirosaki Wakiso, and students at the students of the Department of Agriculture.
Now that we are meeting with Pencil and if we are to try to use languages, we may not different languages we may end up not having a meeting. Because now that I covered Baruski and then there won't be any interpreter. But anyway, Russian is not the official language in South Africa. We'll use English as where people can meet, but at least so that we can have a civil discussion that doesn't take long and was able to interpret and do all these things. We love our languages. All languages are equal before the law, and those who believe is before God and before our ancestors and all. So languages are all their identity, equal status. The looking at your we're going to let you take us through the your annual report. And now you know I'm looking at things and I see labor court and I don't know which is which. And then let's take apologies, let me say, before we even
morning everyone, Marcel Williams, the committee secretary. We've received an apology from Honourable Gideon. She's not well. And we've also received an apology from the DG. The DG is away, so he won't be at this meeting.
The DG says he's traveling, something like that, yeah. The executive? Oh, you said
yeah, that is what I was attempting to say in my mother tongue. Before this invitation came to our attention, there was a session that was already planned where all the employees of Pan South from all provinces met starting from Monday. The event ends today, which is part of training and cleaning some of the mess of the past, which we will discuss as we go through the report. But sadly, I only received the, I will call it, formal invitation last week, and all preparations were already in place.
Next time when
we
have something big like that, and we have been meeting and we also have arranged long time ago this, there's no harm in telling us that this week we'll be having this and this and that, so that when you come here, because if you come here, they feel complete with the people who are supposed to be. That is the DG, the people from finance, and of course the executive authority, because there are issues that needs the executive exhibiting his habitus. In our prayers this morning, those are some of the things that we felt, if they are not here, it won't serve, this meeting won't really serve this problem. Because we need to deep come up with things like that we think are, you know, quick games. What are the low-lowing fruits? You guys are in trouble. The potential is there to do things. You can see from the 80s, it was from the past into now. You move from a disclaimer to having an unqualified youth method. That is a great leap forward. Unless if it's a flu, there is something called a flu. I don't know. You think somebody is a sniper when you actually hit by a stray bullet. And I just hope it's not a stray bullet. And this happened even when your CFO had just left, even before giving the reports to the AG's office. And still you came out a bit like this, which means it's a, there is hope. Let's give over to you. We will tolerate this because you remember the last time we had a meeting where the minister was not here and the deputy was. And then today it's even worse. The minister, the deputy, and the DG are not here. Other committees will send you packing. Because it means they are very, we cannot take sitting decisions. So, which this would actually, you know, the things that we're going to fail to get out of this meeting can be interpreted as well, as fruitless expenditure. Because we put this time aside so that we can talk to the executive authority and management about our concerns and our suggestions on the way forward. And if they're not here, it means we're going to have yet another meeting to meet with them. I am not happy, and I know in our prayers people were not very happy with this because we've got a way of looking at things and getting help from the powers that be. Thank you. I'll give over to I'll give over to members about what we do now that the ministers are not here, because I think my comments are so bad. It's like I've already said that this meeting should continue meeting the minister and the teacher. Let me give over to the members. I'm sorry, I don't care. I want to
follow. Thank you, Chair. We can't be seen as people who don't want to be led. What you said in terms of the meeting proceeding, we can't open it up for discussion and kind of take a contrary view, I believe. We take joke from the guidance that you provided. However, I think it's important to note that the same minister and deputy minister were not present when we were dealing with their reports in the recent. And I think that should be noted. And secondly, I think it's important to say that the fact that we are proceeding with this meeting should not be seen or be construed as creating a precedent. So that if it happens next time, then we then feel that we can't take it anymore. And say that the meeting should be abandoned, then that's what we'll do. But I think that it's something that needs to be noted, and the officials that are with us should raise that with both the minister and the deputy minister. Because I think the last time we managed to proceed was at least the DG was here, and we thought that we gave him a strong message as well to take to his principal. So I'm so interested in that. I'm happy that we proceed with the meeting, but as you indicated, this should be recorded and reported accordingly. Thank you, Chair.
You know, there is something. Oh, are there other health care members? You know, when you take people seriously and you know you are going to be late to their meeting, you write them a note. I'm going to be arriving late, I'm going to build this and this and that. You know, that is called the. I use English as my 12th language. I think there's something called etiquette on good manners. Thank you. DG, we're going to give an opportunity to address us and respond to some of these things. You'll be surprised that sometimes people don't have questions because you cannot ask a question that you know is not going to be answered because the person who's supposed to ask the question is not here. So, and that if there's to be any other arrangement going forward, we'll do some of the questions in writing. And then we'll expect the written response to those questions. And our questions are not multiple choice. Yeah, essay kind of. Some of them will need a thesis. So it's always better when you are in a meeting because you can summarize the meeting. So if we say put it down on paper, we expect quite a volume. There are matters that have been with this department and the ministry for more than 10 years. The labor dispute. You cannot fill certain posts because there is litigation. There are issues that are in the labor court, and we respect the judiciary because they respect us also, so we give each other space. So we may not even go deeper into matters that are with the court. I was to say that we can be given through letters some few lines to say this is where we are. And if you want to know more, we've got a legal team in Parliament. And we'll ask them to help us analyze and see if we would or not to discipline right now. So I'll give over to you, Hoshi.
Honorable members, thank you very much for this opportunity. For us as PennSouth, this is a much needed opportunity because when you are given the accounting authority responsibility, sometimes you try to shout and when no one is answering or coming to your rescue, you regret and even ask yourself why did you at the first place say yes to the call. Briefly, as a disclaimer, the current board was interviewed in November 2018 and appointed in March. In March, meaning when we arrived, the year in question was already concluded. It was just the last part of preparing the annual report that we were part of it. But just to put matters into context, PennSouth has run for almost 2 years without a board before our appointment. The previous board was dissolved. A board before that was dissolved. After the subsequent or the second last board was dissolved, there was also almost two years without a board. During our induction at Izigo, I was the first board member to
contribute. And I said it frankly to the minister that accepting the appointment was like signing a death warrant. Because when two boards were dissolved before you, chances are high that you will also be dissolved. And more worrisome is the damage that is done for an institution to run for 2 years without a board. It's just too much for a board, and it will require support from all relevant parties, starting with the shareholder, parliament, and so forth. So this is a point of departure. If you can go through the history of PenSouth, this is the first time we have a board without a professor or an advocate, which says people are running away from PenSouth because they do not want to destroy their careers. Now we just have doctors, we have attorneys. And when you look at the structures of PenSouth, there is a board and there are units underneath. That's where now professors are. They are hiding there because you can't be dissolved there. This is the point of departure. But why did we say yes to the call? Why did we want to put our necks on this Boucher table? Because we understand that language is everything. Cordesa will remind us that one of the greatest space of no compromise was language. And we understand that for some of us who have options for other languages, it might not be clear, but there are people who have nothing else but their mother tongue as the only means of accessing education, accessing information, getting service delivery, anything else, job opportunities. So that is one part of the background. The second part, the institution has been in a legal status crisis from the onset, where it is trapped between two shareholders, that is the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture and Parliament, as in the Speaker's office. Entering into office, I remember I sent a letter to the presidency, the minister and the state, the speaker, because I realized that some of the challenges that we will go through emanate from there, because when it suits the management belongs to what we call institutions supporting democracy. And remember, PenSouth is Schedule 1, it's not Chapter 9. That forum is mainly for Chapter 1 and Chapter 9, and they call it a similar or related institution. But we then analyzed, sometimes, if not most of the time, the management opt for that leg because they know that sense of accountability is less when you account straight to the speaker's office as opposed to the department, because it already has other entities. So it has a model in place to do monitoring and evaluation. Now, within the department, it's the only Schedule 1 constitutional institution, meaning it is also lost because the way it is governed, it's governed by the Constitution, not by the departmental policies, and that becomes problematic. These are the two main point of departures that I wish members can indulge on, not now, they are serious issues. And we as a board, we have been clear that we do not have preference, but we need direction.
we can't, unless Dr. Tiso is here, on the 27th, the 22nd, we had, there was a plan of a meeting with the minister, signing of the contract. The same date, there was a meeting of the institution supporting democracy, and they wanted Chairperson in both. And we thought we will easily mingle in the meantime, but we realized that we can't indeed worship two lords, or however we can put it. So let this be a generic submission to the committee that most of the challenges emanate from there, because a person can say today we belong to this side, tomorrow when it suits them we belong to the other side. No, there are benefits they said, we also belong. So for the board, it is, we discussed it, we feel it is above our authority, and it needs to be somewhere decided upon, because it is causing many challenges. So I will try to get into the details where we can, but some of the cases that happened during the 2 years without the board were comprised in a forensic report called Govoda. After being elected, I had a meeting with the minister, and Dr. Tiso was there, where they were doing handover, and I was given this forensic report. It has been a difficult journey, obviously, because the moment the management knew that we have this document and they know they are implicated, they started doing whatever it takes to sabotage our moves. We were frustrated, because anything that you can do in terms of consequence management includes or require SCN processes. And when the executive is in charge of that process, then it will just frustrate you. We tried to discuss with the department. I remember in one meeting we had with Dr. Tiso, they were offering to assist us, but nothing was fruitful from that. So those are the background and frustration that the board had. We had to take many decisions, and we became mafias at one point, because that was the only way we could deal with consequence management, which did not happen in the history of PenSouth. Many people got away with a lot. So when we look at the presentation here, in the interest of time, let's jump all this introductory part. I don't know if do we need them.
You have said more than a mouth. Actually, the more you talk, the more I realize that the gaps are this big. You know, when we started, I said, all of us here are not culturally active, or even language practitioners and all that, and that we are never involved in this at this level before. And we even said that, no, we need intervention at the higher level, where we meet as two select committees and the portfolio committees, to understand what are the issues, what is the mandate, what are the processes, because we are formed in terms of the law of parliament, and that we need to close that gap. And once we close that gap, and we all see from the same input, it would be much easier to. I mean, even now our discussion is going to be nothing. There's nothing that you can think for now, even given the nature in which we are structured in this meeting. But some of the things have to be answered by the executive authorities, who are the people who should take responsibility for everything, you know, the running and the planning of things. if corrections have to be made, where should it come from? It can't be. Is the board together with the executive authority and management who should take this responsibility for some of the things. So I'll give over to members and just to check in. Should we continue with this working through by the weather and this material can be done? Or maybe we, let me give over to you. Let me start from the other side, from the beginning.
Thank you, Chairperson. I mean, I think we obviously all have very urgent questions to ask. I think we understand what the issues are that the department is facing, and we are all very concerned. However, as the Chairperson has stated, I don't think this is the ideal time, neither the correct audience that we have, and it would be unfair of us to impose those questions on all of you. Yeah. We understand what you said, and we take cognizance of what you said, because I think it's very important, the message that you've given to us, it's given us a further understanding of what we already know. However, Chairperson, I have questions, obviously, that I'm having now, but I'm not going to ask questions. I think I will wait for the correct platform in which to address them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. No, I think my colleagues inside have said it all, but also, Chair, with the next meeting or the proposed meeting for the joint sitting, I think it should be the matter of agents, because while we wait, still these problems, they are piled up. So I feel Chair what he's saying, and I also have questions, but most of the questions, they can't be answered by him or the panel before us. So I think in the next meeting that we're going to have, especially discussing this, we'll need everybody present. I think it needs to be stated that the meeting needs everybody, especially the ministers and the DG. Thank you, Chair.
Oh,
you know,
Honourable
Chair,
no, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I think for me, it's important to applaud the board chair and his deputy for coming to do a presentation. Because in most instances, it's the bureaucrats that do a presentation, and board members are there to support or give an overview and so on. I think their willingness to be here and do that presentation must be commended. Secondly, Chairperson, I think you are right when you say that the few points that the Chair has given us in terms of his overview of the outlook of this entity says a lot about what interventions are required. You can't operate without a board for 2 years if you want to make a meaningful contribution and meet the mandate that the entity stands for. And if we are really serious and committed in being an assistive entity to our democracy, we need to have governance structures operating as a well-oiled machine, and which is what I think is the crux of the problem as it is. So I want to suggest concretely, Chairperson, that probably agreeing with Umadanduna next to me, that the meeting between ourselves and the portfolio committee needs to happen as a matter of urgency, but also we would need this presentation to be made also before that joint committee meeting, with a specific highlight on the challenges that are a limitation in terms of meeting its core mandate. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I think that should be treated as urgent, and a presentation. I mean, it's also commendable, Chair, that finances are not handled in a way that, you know, it's one thing to have government structures in Qatar and have money squandered left, right, and center. The fact that at least there are controls in expenditure, even though government structures are struggling, says to me that we need to support those that are still willing to serve in this board and do our part as lawmakers to make sure that the issue of accountability, which is highlighted also as a problem, is addressed by those that are in power to make sure that we play our part in giving that kind of support. However, all the other things, Chair, like the litigations, like those who are taking the entity to court for this and other reasons, I think they are secondary. If we deal with the governance structure, everything else will start falling into place, and the board, as it then sits down to do or make their hands dirty in working, they will know that at least there is legislative support that comes on our side. So I'm saying, Chair, for me, I think that meeting should happen urgently, and that presentation is made, and then we make our input based on that presentation and provide support. Thank you, Chair.
White elephant. So it's better at the department, your department supposed to. So they covered me, our colleagues covered me. I don't know how to put, but they must understand, Panther, that we not undermine you. We don't undermine you. We thank you for to come to us and tell us what's going on. But the problem is there are these questions we're supposed to ask, and you have a problem in yourself. So it's like let you get delay over. So it's better, Chair, but next time, Okanyam can be as early as January. We have this meeting. January or February? We're going to close first. Let's make it month January, make it bigger. Yeah, well?
Thanks, sir. This thing is tricky. It may look very small, but we are dealing with matters that I mean, there's a case here for you. Right, some court cases for two matters that may be
carried.
And we have a
contract,
so
next year.
Two years of and then there are pending, other pending cases and all that. But my worry is that it's like, you know, somebody will tell us what Mandela is today, because this method belongs to the era of Mandela. We're not supposed to be dealing with issues like this. By this time, after so many years, systems should be in place to manage the law. Who falls what, who sits what, who sits this, that's what. It's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate. And that is unfortunate that those who are supposed to be more information and so they are being unknown. So, like I said earlier, we're going to meet with the portfolio. And then before even that, we did all sorts of do our homework. Get more information about this legislation. Why are you having this problem? That's why. So, because if there's something that guides you, that guides us, we shouldn't be. Why are the gaps? And in the process, we're going to engage with you as the board, the chairman and the committee, and we'll be the question of date and time, we can discuss that once we really know what kind of interventions, what are we doing with you. Because this thing is bigger than we think. Like we think it is. It's bigger than much more. And with this week, before I close the meeting, because I don't think we soon to be here. Your answers to those will help us. They don't really understand where the problems are and what kind of interventions they will put in. And some of the interventions we have to check with you as a board. Because you are practitioners. And not all practitioners are practitioners, and not all politicians are. So we need to meet each other. Part of the reason we need to understand the information from you, what causes the challenges. We're going to say something before we close the session.
Thank you very much, Chair. And this is just to advise you on the process of the investigation. And I think the generic argument is on what PFMA says. In PFMA, PenSouth is classified as a Chapter 9 institution. And Section 3.3 of PFMA says wherever there is contradiction between PFMA and any other act, then PFMA supersede that act. Mm-hmm. Now, in the PenSouth Act, it is clear that it's Schedule 1, not Chapter 9. So the argument has been around that issue, that because it is mispositioned on the PFMA, and 3.3 of that PFMA says wherever there is contradiction, then PFMA supersede any other legislative piece, then people have used that as an argument, and they continue doing that. But in the process, obviously, it because there's many other challenges. But from our side, we heartily thank this opportunity, and there is hope, because for a long time we thought we are alone. As I said from the opening statement, we were making noise to many places, but it was not easy. Language question in the country is not yet taken as a matter of agent beyond just the rhetoric. So we believe it can be done. We believe it's something that processes like 1994 stood for. And if we fail on this one, we are failing on the basic human rights element, which we will never forgive ourselves in the future. Thank you very much.
The South African Labour Language Board was formed in terms of the section in the Italian Constitution that was amended when the new Constitution was adopted. So, the Act Number 10 of 1999. I think that will guide us going forward to go. And then where to from here, where do you want to Then you need to send the in terms of the national development, where do we feel ourselves in the next 10 years or achievement of that? So with this, we can say we will keep you aware, we'll keep contact with you through our team and support system. And thank you very much. The questions will follow. Some of them in writing. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's easy go in.
Thank you. Chairperson of the Council of Zika. I served on the previous council Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Roxana Umar. I'm the CEO of the Zico Museums of South Africa.
Good morning. My name is Ronel Pedro. I'm the CFO at the Zico.
Good morning. My name is Bongani Njovu. I'm the Executive Director for Core Functions at Zico.
Good morning. I'm Denise Kraus. I'm the Executive Director Operations at the Zico.
Sorry for that, honourable members. Good morning. I'm Saki Okiso. I'm the Chief Director responsible for Entities Management in the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Mabeta Ralimipi, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General.
A new meeting. Did you talk into the I'll give over to the board to brief us. I know that you've got the
of the previous council, there were two of us were not there on the day when that pic was taken, so we added that. And the date for Mandela Day was, we got the month wrong, so we just fixed that. Chair, I'm sure all of you know that Zico is a Xhosa name, meaning earth. Traditionally, symbolically, it's a social center of the home. It's a place associated with warmth, kinship, etc. We are in, it's made up of 11 museums and one social history center. From the South African Museum, the South African National Gallery, the Slave Lodge Museum, Rustin Freer Museum, Groot Constantia Museum, World Cup Museum, etc. Just an overview about us. And many of you know museums provide, and I think you alluded to some of it, Chair, is an important social compass, vital platforms. It serves as vessels to promote human rights, social inclusion, and we believe innovative thought. And as you say, we had a clean audit, and we continue to flourish as to fulfill our mandate as a sudden flash of museum of South Africa. Our focus are some of the following: to address the issues of colonization, including our visitors and our publics in our narratives, recognize the inequalities of the past, and to reclaim our powerful histories of all the people of South Africa. we create new thinking, new references and new touch points to inspire all of our people, visitors, to unlock our path. And for people to see the treasures that we have in our museums. And we want to build collections to speak and represent our collective past and also look towards our future. We want to enlive in aspirations, and we want to be proud of our heritage, of what it means to be a South African, and we want to do it through our museum. This is the council chairperson. Those are the council members there, except myself and Judith. She's not on the picture. But in the document that was handed out to you, you can see the two of us are inserted there. We complied with the Cultural Institutions Act and all the other heritage-related legislation. And I'm sure the department can attest to that. We're governed by a council that's appointed on a 3-year term by the Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture. I was reappointed for another 3-year term, and the Minister appointed me to, I accepted the appointment to be chairperson for the next term. We've got a component dealing with audience development and education. And they really, the aim is to show our interconnectedness to our world and give voice to the stories that have to be heard. That's a very exciting component. Where are we now? Chairperson, as you, let me go to the next slide. 2018-2019 museums, you know, we want to get people through to people to experience our museums, and we had about over 500,000 people visiting our museums 2018-2019, and we gave about 19,000 concessions. That means that people who couldn't afford to pay the entrance fees, like schools, old age homes, and communities, we gave them free entry, about 19,000, almost 20,000, and we did that, and we gave them free entry on some commemorative days, meaning our public holidays, etc. And through access, obviously, you know, this is the age of social media, and one needs to connect with the citizens all over the world and in our country. So we had about 5,000, almost 6,000 Twitter followers. I'm sure many of you are on Twitter. We had about 250,000 people visiting our website during that year. And we've got about just under 12,000 Facebook fans, which is the way that people talk nowadays. Our National Gallery, which is one of the flagships of Ezekiel, we had about 5,000 adults visited the gallery during that period, and just 1,500 children visited the gallery. Then we have an exciting part of the museum, which is our planetarium. And our planetarium chairperson was upgraded to the value of 27 million over the period. And that we did with funding that we got from the Lotto, from University of the Western Cape, UCT, CPUT, National Research Foundation, and the DIC. And that's a very popular site for people to visit. We had over 12,000 adults and 1,000 children experience museums in a new light. We call it After Dark. That facility is really world class, and if members haven't visited, we encourage many members to make a turn at our planetarium. Then the Western Cape is quite huge. What we've got a mobile museum as well to take Ezekiel to the communities, what's been experienced here. And it's an ongoing educational project. It's an essential part of Ezekiel to connect people and in with our history. And the mobile museum takes creative, educational, and inspirational museum resources to schools and communities in historically disadvantaged communities. We had about 53 outreach trips, reaching about 17,000 people. We went to the Eastern Cape as well. We had some interaction at the Grahamstown Festival. To the Northern Cape as well, we had some connectivity with the opening of the Solplaikie University. And this museum mostly reaches schools, chapters. And then obviously a lot of people can't afford to come to the museums. Lots of schools, etc. So we've got a partnership with the HCI Foundation, which is an arm of Golden Arrow. HCI on Golden Arrow, and they've given us assistance to such an extent that we could assist school, especially school children and youth clubs, etc., to come to Windtown Museum, so we get free transport. So we get buses for them to come to the museum. So we had about 5,000 people, and it's mostly from the Cape Metro, because that is the area where Golden Arrow operates. We talk a bit about social cohesion and community development, and we did three promotional campaigns, promoted half price holiday discounts and free entrance on certain days to assist people to explore the museum for free. The one was International Museum Day. The other one was we call it the Inherit Festival, and that happens during Heritage Week. And the next one is Celebrate Summer, which is during the school holidays, and it's probably going to kick in now again this year. The opportunity to get free entry commemorative days meant that over 30,000 people took advantage of that free entry, chairperson, which is, if it wasn't for that, lots of people wouldn't be able to come visit our museums. Heritage Day 2018, we had an increase of about 54,000 people visited our museums. And we're quite happy about that. And during that Heritage Week, there was over 20,000 people gained entry, free entry to our museums during Heritage Week. Then in terms of engaging and the kind of coverage that we got, our media coverage quite positive during the period. They say that our media coverage was equivalent to about 56 million rand. That's the kind of money that we don't have to pay for that. and it reached about 26 million people over all kinds of platforms, print, broadcast, and online. Then, Chairperson, we did something on Africa Day to also as a tribute to Madiba, and we call it the Africa Reimagined Mandela Tribute. And here we use songs from different parts of the African continent to reinforce our oneness as being part of Africa. That happened on 25th of May 2018, and we celebrated both the Mandela centenary and Mama Sisulu centenary as well, also happened during that period. In terms of engaging with the public, we also have very important public discussion on the importance of revitalizing indigenous languages, and that took place on Human Rights Day, and there were quite a lot of young people attended that as well. Then we have lots of public spaces, Chairperson, and we endeavor to use our spaces to benefit all South Africans, and we want to provide relevant and inclusive exhibitions that, as indicated, that reveal and celebrate our diverse cultures and our histories. And as said, we opened our centenary commemoration of Madiba with the Tata Madiba, Father of Our Nation, Father of Our Democracy, which we opened on International Mandela Day. It's not 18th of May, but 18th of July. That's also one exhibition we would encourage members to make a point to go and visit. Then we had something very useful was International Mother Tongue Day on 23rd of February. And we wanted to promote the use of South Africa's indigenous languages on that day through the activities that we did at ISICO. We also had staff sharing knowledge and experiences with school learners from grades 9 to 11 to encourage some of them to look at possible careers within museums. Both in South Africa but internationally as well. Then we also contributed to the BRICS initiative that South Africa is part of, and there was an exhibition called Uniqueness and Conversion, which was hosted in Beijing, and Iziko went to represent South Africa there. Then there's another very important exhibition that we have. It's called Unshackled History. It's at the Slave Lodge. It's about the wreck of the slave ship Sao Jose. It contains artifacts that one has never seen before in South Africa. The wreck is just off Clifton's Fourth Beach. SARA declared it as a National Heritage Site. And we would encourage members to also come and have a look at that exhibition, which is at our Slave Lodge, which is just next to Parliament. Then we had an exhibition in terms of called Interlocking Times, deals with the issue of transformation and decolonization of our museums that must take place. And that is, we had about 19 exhibitions in that regard, and 14 public programs were presented. And as indicated, we consistently work to create a generation of proudly African citizens that are reflective and are engaged and are not scared to speak their mind. In terms of human capital and professional capacity building, we are at the forefront in terms of cultural and natural heritage research in South Africa, and we've got a unique hub for knowledge generation and capacity building of scarce museology skills, Chairperson. We've got about 78 active research projects that our staff are involved in, and there's about 34 field trips that our staff has conducted. We contributed in about 30 peer-reviewed publications, and our staff we've curated over 15,000 digitized artifacts. We've got five PhD students doing research in our collections, and they're supervised by our staff, and two of those PhD students are our own students. We hosted about 33 interns in various programs, and we've got five postdoctorate associates, and those are funded by the NRF. And are co-supervised by Ezekiel. And the one thing that we can say is that many students, they love to come to Ezekiel and to do their research and their work there. I say that constantly, and the CEO say it constantly as well, is that the staff are the lifeblood of the Ezekiel Museum. We've provided tertiary training for 8 staff members and 338 training opportunities for the staff that we have. We've got about 253 staff members on our books. Obviously, we can't do anything without partnerships, Chairperson. We've got about 16 project partnerships that we do with various people. We've got 49 partnerships in support of projects and initiatives of our education department. And we maintain 67 long-term partnerships with entities and individuals, and that assists us to deliver on our mandate. Now we're going in terms of the accounting authority's report. I'm just going to go through it briefly, and any questions, the CFO is here. The one big issue for us is the post-retirement medical liability, and it's not only concerned Zico, but it concerns many other entities, both in DAC and other parts of the public sector in South Africa. And we're working with National Treasury to address that. But the one thing that we say that our post-retirement medical aid liability decreased by about $3 million. It assisted us to increase our net surplus for the year. The other big point that we can say is that our total revenue decreased by about 5%. It's because of the lack of decrease in additional income that we receive, and obviously the grant that we receive from DAC has decreased as well. And then, as I indicated during the year, our investments, cash and cash equivalents decreased by about $5 million. Then our income, Chairperson, is about, for the year, is about 187 million for the last 2018-2019, compared to 2017-2018, which was 197 million. I indicated that the subsidy allocation from DAC had actually increased by about 3% because they gave us additional money for a particular project that we had to do. And 16% of our income was derived from donations, including donor funding, and then there's sometimes you get the conditional grant funding from that for a specific project. Our expenditure is about, what is it, about 187 million? Yeah, 170? Oh yes, yeah, 173 million. Increase about 5%. And our salary expenditure decreased from about by 1%, 39 to 38%. Then accounting as our financial position, that looks it looks like we got lots of money. It's about 2.5 billion on net assets. But that includes all the value of our collections. In terms of CRAP 103, you need to value your collections now. And that's what we've done, and we had to do that with the specific allocation that we received from DAC. And we had experts doing that. So that our net assets is about 2.5 billion. Some of it is insured to an extent, but it's too the insurance costs would be too expensive to insure all of them. As you, when you started, Chairperson, you said that we received an unqualified audit report by the Auditor General, which the council needs to thank the management team and all the staff of Indico. In respect of donations that we received from, remember I spoke earlier on about that we depend a lot on donations and so on from foundations, corporate and private individuals for different projects. We received about 10 million in donations for the year. And I think just some further detail around our financial position for the year. It's there. If there's any further questions, we would be ready to answer that, Chairperson. So concluding, the entity is in a good state. It's in good shape. We are going to face more challenges because of the additional budget cuts that we know is coming in the next financial year. The Minister of Finance has alluded to, and DAC has alluded to us as well. But otherwise, staff remains committed. We've got a new energized board. There's quite a number of young people part of the board from the council. And the management team is stable. That's us. Chair, thank you.
Yeah, so, thanks a lot for the elaborate support. And of course, we always think what we can get feedback from the AG. But then it means that we'll ultimately achieve our goals going forward. If we use the finances the way they are needed to be used and account properly, what more do we want? Because then it means that we would be able to achieve our goals with minimum strain. Members, over to you with the questions that members would like to ask. I've already started with my questions when I did the OB. What are these findings that you know, find it? Let's give over to the people to come and then from there we can get and actually the chairperson, this session is yours. I'm giving it to you to call the money to your team, those who are to give you after your opening.
Thank you, Chair. So in the 2018-19 financial year, Iziko received an unqualified audit opinion with some emphasis of matter. And the emphasis of matter relates to recent ESSA figures. And the two material of those are the servicing kind and the CRAP 103 figure restatement. Now, you know, accounting standards are really strange and they are highly interpreted. So with the servicing kind a restatement, the Auditor General found that, you know, we occupying the museum spaces are occupied free of charge. And that there is an accounting standard that says that we need to quantify it. So we felt that, you know, initially we felt that that was something that we needed to quantify. And then after that, after some argument with the AG, they decided that we need to quantify. So what that means is that we need to find the market value of all the spaces that we occupy, that is DPW spaces, buildings, and report that. So it's what you can regard as a non-cash sort of entry transaction. The other one was with the restatement of the heritage assets. Now, if you go as a really diverse and very large collection. So the CRAP 103 process that requires that we quantify our collections and value them, and we had hadn't sort of we're still in the process because we are building renovations at the, you know, at Iziko, and so we did some work subsequent, and then we found that, you know, some of our figures needed to be restated. Okay, so that answers the question.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Because the chair said I was going to take charge of
the meeting. The chairperson is responsible for the presentation of the office team. So we decide to close after this one if there are issues, and then after that we'll ask members if there are questions.
Just so one thing that we want to flag is the issue of the maintenance and the upkeep of the buildings, because we got some unique buildings. And DPW, Department of Public Works, has historically been responsible for that. And there is a slow withdrawal from playing that role and moving it over to Iziko itself. And we as the council has flagged that as something that needs further attention. Because if you don't maintain your buildings to the relevant extent, soon some of these are irreplaceable. So there needs to be a high level engagement in that regard. It's a strategic decision that the country needs to make. for the benefit of future generations. I thought the fact that we are here, maybe let me put it out there to the committee to be aware of, and our friends from DAC is here, and I think they are quite aware of that, and I'm sure if we are flagging that, then I'm sure that many of the other entities are probably doing the same.
Are there other from your team that would want to add something?
Yeah, some there, anything else that you want to
before we take the question.
We'll, Chair, we are quite comfortable. We prefer to.
Thanks a lot. Is that something that they could want to say?
Thank you, Chair. Of the portfolio of entities that we have, I mean, you probably know that we have 25 public entities. Of those, there's about 13 or 14 or so museums. This is one of the best performing museums amongst those 13 museums. It's coming from a history where it was getting clean audits until the introduction of GRAP 103, which actually impacted on a number of public entities. Because I mean, in museum, in Ziko Museum, we're talking about millions of collections that needed to be accounted for and also be valued. And maybe that's why you even see in their balance sheet now, they're posting amounts of about 2.5 billion rand, which can be deceiving at times to say, well, there's quite a lot of assets there that are valuable, whereas you might find that one of those assets is a mosquito. No, just kidding. But I mean, you had to value in some institutions a mosquito because it's part of the heritage collection, and basically putting the value, that means then it goes into your balance sheet. So yes, we have some infrastructure programs that we are undertaking or doing with them. There's a courtyard that we've invested in because the storage space was diminishing a little bit, and then we had to actually invest a lot in that. And there are other infrastructure projects, of course, that we are doing with them to make sure that we expand the offerings and the spaces within those museums. So in a nutshell, it's one of our best performing museums, and as you can see, in terms of they're not dependent on the government grant only, they have gone out to make sure that they actually use that to leverage funding from other sources, which is, I think at this point, it's about 16 to 20% of the total revenue that they're generating. So that's something commendable, because you find with some of our institutions, they're totally dependent on the government grant. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just said it much a vendor. Bye, thank you.
I just want to check, what's your relationship with RI? The Romanian government? Is it part of his ego?
Robben Island Museum stand on its own, chairperson for its own council. No, they stand totally on their own, although we basically get play on their own. It's an entity, yeah, that can answer, but it's an entity, it's got its own council, its own CEO, its own staff, its own everything.
If I may, Chair, as I've indicated earlier, we have about 13 to 14 museums, and Robben Island is one of those museums. It's governed by a separate accounting authority completely. It's got its own budget and governance structures. So it's not part of IZICO. IZICO is a flagship program which is comprised of a number of museums or previous institutions like Slave Lodge and all of that that were actually brought together. So it's a conglomerate of those, but it will be, then we formed what we called a flagship. So we have two flagship museums, which is one, the IZICO, which is based here in Cape Town, and we have another one in Gauteng, which is Di Tsong Museum. Those are two flagship programs. The flagship museum, Di Tsong Museum in Pretoria. Again, I mean, if I can mention all the 14 museums,
in KZN we have about three. We have KZN Museum and Sunduzi Museum and Luthuli Museum in, and then in the Eastern Cape, and Noma is part of Msunduzi, so those are the four museums. In the Eastern Cape, we have the Nelson Mandela Museum, and we've also included Amazwi as one of the museums that are based there. Amazwi is what we call the National English Literary Museum, which is based in Makanda, what we used to be Grahamstown. And then we then have also here in the Western Cape about four museums, It's the Ziko Museum, Robben Island Museum, and we have the African Style Museum, which is based in the Paarl. And then in the Free State, we have three museums again, the War Museum of the Boer Republics, National Museum, and also, I think the other one is not in Free State, actually it's in the Northern Cape, which is William Humphrey Art Gallery. It's part of our museum structure. And then in Gauteng, we also have a number of museums, including Freedom Park, its own museum, and yeah, I think those are the two museums, because other institutions fall in other categories. Because we also have playhouses, we have libraries, so we have a whole range of institutions here. In total, there are 25.
Yeah, there's actually a lot to learn here, but we don't have a part because you know we are new in this field. We're all new members of the National Assembly coming from different, because National Assembly, National Council of Provinces coming from different provinces. And we, like I said earlier when I was talking to other team, that we understand that not all curators or people who run arts and museums and all, not all of them are politicians. But that not all politicians also are curators and people who understand museums. So we've got to enrich one another as we engage. I'll say again that oversight is database. So if you don't have information, you can't play proper oversight. And some of what we need to do as this committee and you and the ISIG and others is to, every time where we visit some of the same museum and see what is this that we are actually talking about. You know, it's easier to talk about something theoretically. You have never even seen people who work there. You don't even know what their problems and challenges are. You don't know what their experience is going to share. You know, because when you bring with people in this area, you go to another place, they don't share information, we know when the Western Cape. This is how they do things at easy. But here in the Free State, why is things going this way and not that way? And it helps us so. And that this program of oversight in the beginning, you should have been sharing information, so that you know what the committee wants in terms of our strategic approach in the next 5 years. Because we're going to be here for the next one. This is our, the first of many meetings to come. And it will, obviously when we start, there won't be your meetings, there won't be here. And as time goes, then oversight and everything, it becomes now interesting, you know, so that we move together, because we have a country to build. And you are responsible for the future of this country. It's past, it's present, and the future is in your hands. So, if whatever we have gets destroyed or gets distorted, then so on, then what? You're just in trouble. So I'll give over to members. I think they have some questions to ask, uses of clarity, matters of debate, where they are, where they Honorable Christian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have many questions, maybe just a few questions of clarity. On your presentation, you mentioned that you foresee some budget cuts. I would like to know, what do you think the implications would be on Ezekiel with the foreseen budget cuts? And then secondly, I see that also you have reported that the museums have received less visitors than expected. Why do you suspect that this has happened, and what are your plans to rectify that? Do you think it's not being promoted sufficiently, and if so, what do you think is needed to do so? Because obviously a drop in the amount of visitors would be a drop in your finances as well. And then just a last point of clarity, which you have also mentioned, that language is a huge part of Ezekiel. So my question is regarding the indigenous language of the Khoi and the San of the Western Cape. What role are you playing, what plans do you have to protect especially the language of the Khoi and the San? Do you have any plans for the future to see to it that those are promoted and that those languages are in fact saved? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable. Another member's question? Excuse me. I've talked about other, I've asked other questions in the beginning about discipline issues, normally cases. What are the issues that are the people who are in the community, those who are charged, at what level? I usually travel on Easter weekend. Last year I was in Vietnam. I went to see the view of the Ho Chi Minh Museum. There are queues. You've got to book things in advance because schools book. I think they've got a 3-year booking. So every day there are buses of school kids, long queues, going to the museum with their Vietnamese flags and all that. It's something solemn, like it's like a holy place, like a shrine of some sort or something. But that is what you see, you know, like you can see the Vietnamese at their best. Tranquility and how they treat that area as like a holy place, and they're not seriously religious people in terms of preaching the train, preaching the bus, and even preaching the Hindu mission. But in Vietnam, then you've got people who ensure that all their children know the history of their country. Why are they where they are and where are they going to? And these are done, you know, like that thing here, the arts, culture, and museum of in the capital. So what is this that we are doing actually is the SEC and TEC and that to so that there is interest of our young people in, you know, South Africa, let me say generally, to appreciate what we have and know what we have as a country, what makes us tick. So, and that failure to attract our own people, how do you expect to
I'll tell you. When you can even attract the kingdom,
if I were to ask questions, which is a little bit out there, just correct me then. Okay, how many vacancies you have? Because in your annual report, in page 73, you have an active site manager. So, if you can just give us. Second one, does the staff of Iziko unionized? And the third one, Iziko has employment equity plan. It's on the teacher. Thank you.
Fire Ranki. Honorable Lutuku, Madam.
Thank you, Chair.
Princess
Lutuku. I thought you forgot that I'm a princess. Everybody.
They are not princesses here, they are honorable.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, we want to welcome that presentation, and my question is because I see on your presentation that you said you have gained a free entry to museum during AMA Heritage Week. So how do people know which sometimes they get free entries? Because I remember the last time I went to the museum, I was still in school. In the early grades. So I think the museums are the most important part of our culture. So most people can't even afford to go there. So are you guys telling of, and are the people aware that they can go to museum and get free entry? And also I heard that the chair said that we should go and visit this museum. So that we can get the feel of what we are talking about, because our job is to do an over eye. So sometimes we speak of something that we've never seen and we don't know what we're talking about unless the one that we read on paper. So I think we should get an invite from the chair soon to go to this museum, because I don't remember even the structure of the museum.
Okay, on your slide, I don't know what slide number one, but brother slide.
Okay.
We're talking about water. You have a crisis here. I know it's not your part, but maybe you can help. In Eastern Cape, we have drought. In fact, the whole Eastern Cape. I can't say drought or any other what. Can you do something? Jessica? Mr. Please. Name. You can do something or what? I don't know. Secondly, I see the return is equal, but I'm not quite sure where it's situated. I must be honest with you guys. I don't know whether I'm right, whether I'm on the other side. Or that's right, I'm not quite sure. Where it's situated? It's near the parliament.
Thank you.
And on that your record, please. I don't know what I feel like in people.
Fundraising and donor relations positions vis-a-vis money spent in that in the position. How much are you raising? That you know, if you get a fundraiser, someone who is employed, there's a fundraiser. Other institutions will say you keep 10% of what you raise, or you are employed as a fundraiser with other responsibilities, and this is your salary for the year. But if you employed as a fundraiser and then you do not, you can't raise anything else, then we still have to pay you. Pay you for what?
Yeah.
Yeah, the other questions were asked of the employment equity plan. Do you have that? Can we be clarified why under revenue from non-exchange transactions, property businesses can't be listed as something else? Because it's that they were not, what do they call them, misstatements or whatever. I think you'll understand them, but I'm not a financial person. But I can calculate the change when I understand that I know. For now, those will be the questions. I noted some of them. But in the meantime, as we get answers to some of the Chairperson, over to you. All these questions goes to the chair, and the chair will decide how he answers them, giving some to another.
Jay, thanks. As you said, I'll answer some and then I'll refer some to the others. It's the easy ones. Staff unionized? Yes, they are staff. They are unionized. The union that operates within our space is Nahau. We do have an employment equity plan. If members want a copy of it, we can make it available. How do people know there is free entry? As I said, we communicate via social media. We on, what's it, Twitter, Facebook, and our website. And we've got interactions with all the schools, education department. And as I indicated about the media coverage, we have about 56 million value of media coverage. So in that way. The other way that people also know is we've got the mobile library, a mobile museum that we spoke about earlier on. There's a thought to have a mobile planetarium to take it to the communities. But that's going to have severe cost implications. And with the budget cuts that's there, it would be something that we think would have significant traction. We'll have to probably talk to potential partners. We need to talk to DAC or to the Lotto or someone to give us specific funding for that. but we think that would be a huge, a nice project. Yes, Chairperson, can we use this opportunity to say there is an invite, but we can liaise with the secretariat of the committee around a potential date. As we said, we got 11 sites. We will indicate, we'll sort out the logistics in terms of when and so on, because we'll need to look at how much time we've got available and to do this justice. It might not be just one visit, it might be two or three visits. And we got various openings of activities, etc. We can certainly invite members to some of our activities that we have. And our entities are situated right around here, close to Parliament. So some here in the gardens area, some in the poor cup, and the slave lodge is just right next to you. I would encourage members, for example, to go into the slave lodge. But we can organize that. Always, the one thing that we did with the new council is before we did the induction, I arranged for them to go and see the sites first so they can have a better sense of what we're talking about. I think that would be useful for you. About the draft, the only thing that we can assist, we've got an exhibition here, a water exhibition, and we can see how we can exchange with our colleagues on the Eastern Cape. I need to talk to Dr. Ndlovu about sharing that exhibition or so on, but it's certainly something that we can talk about. Let me just before I hand over to other people. Oh yes, very important question. About the advancement, how much has been raised and so on. Advancement report directly to the CEO. The CEO will answer that question. Fundraising is a massive issue. As Chairperson, I've highlighted that specifically. We're in the process of appointing a director, and fundraising is part of that director's responsibility. And I think you asked the question of what's the return on investment. That is a big issue that we have flagged as the council, especially now with the mindful of the fact how the economy is going. But we've got some interesting ideas in that regard. I'll ask Roxana to talk about the implication of the budget cuts, Chair, because without saying, we'll have to cut our cloth. Some of the nice-to-haves, we'll have to reduce some of it. So it would have an implication. Management would work through it. We don't have the final numbers yet. But as a council and as a management team, we have started discussing that. Roxana, you want to talk about the implication of the budget cuts and the less visitors than what we expected, and how do we plan to up it going forward?
Thank you very much. In terms of the budget cut, like the Chairman has already said, it will have a lot of implications. It also means that staff expectation, there is an expectation, most of the budget, the government grant that we receive a subsidy from the Department of Arts and Culture, that is used to pay salaries. The remainder of the money is actually raised by ourselves for our operations, which means that there's always, if the budget goes up by, say, 5% and then it's cut, then obviously we would have to look at how that is, how we spend it, and we have to constantly, so it's not a budget that you can just say it's cast in stone. We're going to have to look at it all the time. So that it has a lot of implications. Chair said it will have an implication on our operations and scaling our work down quite a bit. In terms of visitors, you've made a very important point that if we're expecting less visitors, it's the state of the economy as well. Feet through the door also equates to money that we derive through admissions. And if those are less, if there's a decrease, this already means that we are finding that operating money becomes meager as well. And we depend on that, which means that we have to employ our resources, our land, labor, capital, all our exhibitions far more in order to have more programs in order to attract, because that the lifeblood of a museum is exhibitions, and you have to have it all the time so that more visitors are coming through. But it's very dependent on the economy, the drop of visitors, as well as there's new museums that have been built, iconic ones in the environment, like sites, and which also means that as you have more people coming into that space, you get less visitors because they have a greater choice. So that, and yeah, hand it over to Dr. Ndlovu.
Before Dr. Ndlovu, before we get to the language, just deal with the people while you're speaking. Talk about the fundraising issue.
Oh, okay. Yes, of course. Thank you very much. If you, I noticed that you have the copies of the annual report. If you look at page 37 of the annual report, you will see that, in fact, we had raised about $7 million, nearly $8 million of our own funding. That's what institutional advancement has to do. That you will see that Ezekiel raised about nearly 8 million of its 7.8 million of its own money. The staff, they do not get any percentage of what is raised for Ezekiel Museum. So they lobby, they just on a salary. They don't get a percentage of anything that is raised. And we do not employ any company to raise funding for us. We actually, our own staff, write up proposals and we put in those proposals for raising cash. And it's mainly through project partnerships that we raise those.
But there is another question. There are instances of an ethical collection. Issues of unethical collection, but we have those kinds of issues, and if so, what is it that you do to address or make sure that it doesn't occur? And the grab one or three issues were raised, because as we do this workshop, also we get the existing report, and we need to satisfy ourselves. Even with the gaps and knowledge that we have, but as time goes, we will pick up. And once we pick up, we'll raise the bar. That's an example of that one. Once we know all at play, we'll raise the bar and make sure that we help you also to raise your bar. Yeah.
What the CEO will but you need to answer the issue about unethical collections.
You know, I was thinking that would be like the financial presentation by the after the finances report. But now what we need was that the flu overtake very quickly. But
I cannot hear you, Chair.
I'm soft spoken, I'm a very shy person. You're just saying those are some of the things that you want. And this is the beginning of a process of also raising our capacity to understand this. Those are some of the things. An ethical collection that worries us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, my chair. We have unethical collections at the Iziko Museums of South Africa, and it is it is one of the issues that also dog many museums in South Africa. It's not just a single thing. In about the, I'm just giving you a little bit of background so that you know what I'm talking about. Historically, in the late, sort of, way later, about 1800s and early 1900s, there was a whole race around the country to support particularly people, scientists, etc., who went around digging up graves of indigenous people. And then they added those collections to the museum because their study was on racial sciences. So we have about 156 unethically collected human beings in our collection, and that has been in the collection for about 100 years. And we're working with that, with our mother body and indigenous communities and local communities, to in fact return in a very sensitive and dignified way these unethically collected human remains.
Very good. I think it was this last week that Stellenbosch is working on something. Stellenbosch University, you are returning some of the remains to some farm workers who are and some of the bodies are exoskeletons are even in the universities and medical colleges. So, yeah, okay. No, but sometimes I confuse the collection with the new collection. So, so there are two collections.
Yeah.
Collection of artworks from your researchers.
Yeah.
And then there is collection of the new that comes from
the
conferences when people, you know, and when you talk about an ethical connection, somebody may say, I want to go up at the Nicho to a museum or something like that. That's only a lighter note, so that the two should not be confused. This collection of revenue is different from collection of an ethical collection of materials for the museums. May they be artifacts like those that in other museums where you get remains of South Africa, gift bottles, the school of Sarji Bartman, and many others, and artifacts that you see in France, in the museums in Paris, made by South Africans. You can't get them here too, and they come from South Africa. We've got lots of things that were collected from this country, you know, that we need some of them there. Yeah. Like what is in Her Majesty's crown. I'm really interested in the cardinal because it belongs here, you know. There will be another university that did some collections and actually get information about the history of this country. You can look at Makpumbuye and other areas.
the golden rhino. There are many stories, you know. And ultimately, those things give to South Africa what belongs to South Africa. And we must start demanding what belongs to us. The things that we see in museums in other worlds. Like you go to Fake, you'll think you are in Egypt if you go to the museum. Yes. There are so many mummies and many artifacts from all over the world that you see in Turkish people. They were once in power in the world some years ago. So the collection, an ethical collection is in relation to that. And not necessarily revenue collection, but those collections leads to revenue improvement. If you have a lot of people coming to your museum, then it means you're generating more revenue. Then you could be sharing that money, so that revenue, with those who lost on what you benefited. But that is another discussion.
For another day.
All members, are there still questions? Maybe some of the questions will follow in writing. But before we close, I'm asking for the members to ask questions, and then if there are other questions that members would like to ask, or is the question that you feel your question wasn't there answered, then we could do that, because you were saying it.
Chair, we just want to answer some of the key questions that some of the members have asked. Dr. Bongani is going to answer the important question around the Koi and the Sun language. What do we do to promote and protect the language? Is not our mandate, but we play a role in that regard. Bongani.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of our attempts to contribute to the protection of the Khoi and the Sami languages, the archive that we have, some of the archival material relates to how the language was spoken, and then also to some of the sounds that were recorded by Lord Peak a century ago. So we also make that archive-like work available to researchers, and also to members of communities who are interested in it. And we also exhibit some of the sounds and of the language that we have from that archive. Most recently, we had an exhibition that the Jefferson spoke of, the Jefferson of Kansas. It started interesting times. In that exhibition, for the first time, we had a narrative that was documented for access in the Sun language. And we also continue to interact with the Khoi and the Sun activists and members of the community for us to be able to contribute and learn from their processes. And if they want access to our collections and to our spaces, we also make them available. Some of the programs that we've also hosted, Jefferson, also we allowed members of the community. Some of them are learning the language from colleagues and communities in Namibia and Botswana to also use the Sam and the Khoi languages in our spaces, and we encourage that. That didn't brief in response to the question.
Thanks, Bongani. Chair, can Denise answer the issue around the number of vacancies that we have and any serious disciplinary issues that we have?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with a disciplinary hearing. We had two dismissals. One person was dismissed for absence without leave for an extended period, and the other person was dismissed for dishonesty. There was also a question at which levels. The dishonesty was a middle manager. Most of the disciplinary methods are for lower levels, but that was specifically for that, and that was also why there was an acting site manager standing in while that person had been dismissed. And then we have our the number of vacancies. We've got a 9% vacancy rate, which is within the acceptable norms. And just to say that we did have an advertisement at the end of the year. It was, its closing date was in March, so many of those would have been appointed in the new year. Many of those vacancies. There were throughout the year 235 vacancies. We have 253 staff members, and the vacancy rate was 9%.
Thank you. Chair, and then the CEO is going to answer your favorite one around property leases and CAP 103.
Just in terms of the financial report, I think the chair is, because of time, he's also in the presentation touched on some of the key points that I would have wanted to raise. And to say to you that, you know, Iziko is in a sound financial position, and we are going concern, but we do have, the implications of the budget are huge, and most of our cash generation is and needs to be done by ourselves. At the moment, our subsidy is 41%, or actual results last year, 41% of our actual income. In terms of the CAP 103 standard, in the financial year ending 2017, all the CAP entities received qualifications on the CAP 103 standard. So to the new standard, even the AG wasn't clear on how they were going to go about it, and none of us realized, you know, the extent of the project. So Iziko is one of the first entities that received an unqualified audit in respect of CAP 103. As we continue, we've always been aware that the project isn't 100% finished just because of the sheer volume, the size of our collection. We weren't able to value all our work. So the project continues and evolves, and we are working towards a time when we would have all our collections valued, all of them listed in electronic databases. So at the moment, we're not 100% there yet. We're aiming to get there before they started the new audit. In terms of the leases, keeping in mind that, you know, the AG has always audited us in a particular way. Last year they raised the issue of service in kind, which says that, you know, we need to quantify as income the value that we're receiving by occupying a space free of charge. And the amounts in question, because of the number of sites that we occupy, the amounts in question turn out to be quite material. So you see in our income statement that we have raised income in the amount of 52 million for the occupation of the spaces free of charge. The difficulty with the AG came about in our differences in interpretation of the standard. So it resulted in us restating corresponding figures and then the current year's figures. So that's how the leases came about. We occupied spaces that are owned by the Department of Public Works.
don't know. I hope that answers that question.
Che, can I just say, we need to make this very important point. Is GAP 103, and DAC will probably hear this as well and they're aware of it, it's got an unintended potential threat for our museums. Is the fact now that we are quantifying the value of the assets that we have, the artifacts, it becomes a, I don't want to use the word sitting duck, but a potential, yeah, it's a security risk in terms of for people wanting to break into our museum, steal some of the stuff. I think there was, yesterday or the day before, there was a story about art pieces and artifacts that were stolen in Germany. And that is something that I think DAC and maybe this committee need to take up with the Auditor General and the various authorities. Whether that is, it is wise, how do we handle that? Because it is a security threat and it's going to have other implications in terms of we will then have to spend more money in terms of security and all of those kind of things. So I just want to flag that to the committee. Thank you. So we wouldn't really would want to let people know that we're sitting on assets of 2.5 billion or 3 billion or 5 billion, etc.
I read some time ago that there was a heist in one of the museums in Europe.
Yeah.
They took irreplaceable works of art and very serious others belonging to the museum. And they were taken by syndicates. Yeah. How ready are we, you know, to secure our assets? There have been instances in the Eastern Cape where there were some guys supposed to be Russian to go in that area and catch small animals, little ones that are not in their country. And they take them out and sell them out of the country. And if people are able to move from that far to come and hunt the small animals in the in the Eastern Cape, it means there must be money. There should be a lot of money involved there. So what more where we have all our valuables in one place and our security is not, we're not even sure about how our assets, how secured our assets, how high our firewalls when it comes to security and other things. I think at the end of our meeting, if there are other further questions because of the work issues that we'll make a follow-up questions in writing. I think some of the questions were not satisfactorily answered because of the way we asked the questions. It's the beginning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and members.